One size fits all seemed like a good idea for clothes.
Nice dress.
It's a t-shirt.
Until you tried it on. Same goes for your healthcare. That's why United Healthcare offers a variety of flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. So whether you're between jobs, coming off a parent's plan, or even missed open enrollment, you can find the plan that fits you best. Find out more about United Healthcare coverage at uh1.com. That's uh1.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince, they exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
You are listening to the Missed Apex podcast. We live F1. Welcome to the Missed Apex podcast. I'm joined by Matt Trumpets.
Hey, Spanners, how you doing?
Yeah, I don't know what we're going to talk about this week, Matt. F1, it's just so boring.
I know, there's barely anything to be said about it these days.
So boring, according to everyone on the internet about 4 or 5 days ago. So I hope all those people who said they were going to quit watching F1 actually did.
I'm sure that they did, because people always do exactly what they say on the internet.
Is it the equivalent of running away from home? I'm never watching F1 again. And then they go around the block, realize they're hungry, and look, they're back watching.
They're back again. Absolutely.
So we're recording this just 2 hours after the race. And in some ways, that is super awesome because it's still fresh in my mind, but also quite frightening.
Oh, yes, it is. And a little bit. Tight on timeline for me.
Yes, and apologies. We were a few minutes late starting with the live stream. So thank you to anyone who's who's born with us, who's bared with us. I don't know how you say that. So for those of you just finding us, we are an independent F1 podcast, but we are delighted to be currently featured on the Downforce Radio feed. Downforce Radio is the nation's motorsport station and will be there for as long as they have us. And that's also where we host the E Radio show about Formula E, where we talk about getting boosted quite a lot, Matt.
And batteries. Lots and lots of batteries.
So, what are we giving you that you can't get elsewhere? Well, we aim to bring you a race review before your Monday morning commute and a podcast that is safe for work. We're keeping it clean so my six-year-old can hear this without me getting summoned to the headmaster. So that's some of the housekeeping out the way. Details on how to join the conversation later. We've got some people with us. We've got Vivian Beauvais.
Hi, everyone. How are you?
So, you're back on this week to celebrate?
Yes, I'm very happy to be back, especially celebrating with Rosewater.
And we've got Vortex Mortio, a.k.a. Ken. How's it going, Ken, all the way from Miami?
Very good. I'm actually in the beautiful northwest of the United States. It's good to be back.
So nearly entirely wrong. And monitoring the chat room for us, back again, very popular, Tony Thunderbeast Barnard. Thanks for minding the Ustream for us, T.
Hey man, I'm glutton for punishment, I'm back.
Let's explore some of the pre-race tidbits. Yeah, Matt, I know you like to talk about some of the little interesting things that crop up in the build-up to the race weekend. What did you pick up on this week?
Well, I'm actually having to cast my mind back. I think one of the interesting things, relatively speaking, at least before we get to the race, the underperformance of Renault, really, and Manor.
Manor, everyone talks about it being an engine, you know, it's an engine series now. It's all about the power unit. But they're sitting there with the Mercedes power unit, far and away the best thing. And they're still looking about 3 or 4 seconds off the pace.
Yeah, they were not looking very fast through the practices and through qualifying. That's certainly true.
Yep. So also one of the major talking points coming up to the race was Alonso not starting because of the accident that he had. Is anybody here sort of doubting that? I mean, some people on Twitter were saying, oh, in the olden days, he'd have dusted himself off, he'd have rubbed some dirt on his wound, and he'd be back in the race. And my unpopular response was, yes, but that's why less people die now.
I was going to say, in the olden days, yeah, he'd have been dead as a doornail. I mean, there would have been no surviving that particular crash, I don't think, before the modern safety standards were instituted. More to the point, he has to pass an FIA medical check after that kind of an accident before he's allowed to drive again. Vivian, you got something for us?
Yeah, if he broke his ribs, believe me, that's very painful. I did break two of my ribs 2 years ago, and when the pain medication wore off, it really got really bad. So I can just imagine Alonso after his drum roll with his car and breaking his ribs. That must be really painful, and I think the medical team just decided he's not going to race. Although he looks good, there's no cast for when you break your ribs.
Yeah, he looked fine, but he didn't pass the medical checks, which is sensible. What's odd is Ron Dennis banging on about him needing to have a second. He was trying to get that decision overturned, which it doesn't make sense to me, because I don't see how a driver with broken ribs is going to drive better than a driver who's perfectly intact.
In order for him to recover, it's going to be a month. So I think he's also going to the Chinese race.
So I just want to mention that was one of the reasons that was an extremely violent crash, was because of the speed involved. And that one of the goals that has been expressed for Formula One is to try to raise the overall speed per lap to gain whatever silly figure it is, 5 seconds per lap. That us fans, we can't really tell if they're going 2 seconds a lap faster when we watch some guy, you know, versus it's all just numbers.
Exactly.
And the faster that they go, some little crash, and all this was just a simple, you know, oops, clip the other car, and boom, that crash nearly killed them. They're planning on going faster. That means it's going to be more G forces when there's a simple little crash like this. It's not the right way to go. And I think this crash is an example of why you don't want to go that direction.
It's a good point.
Yeah. So, I mean, I'm very happy with the decision for him not to do that. Because what you've got is you'll be fine driving around, but it's in that fail scenario that he's got that additional risk. But Tony, you were picking up on some of the human element of this. Of course, Mr. Johnny Herbert decided to come out and write that perhaps it was time for Alonso to retire. All very brave behind a typewriter, but you enjoyed the situation on Sky Sports.
Oh, it was so tantalizingly delicious. The cringe and the look on his face as Alonso was walking over, and his colleague as well. I don't know him. I'm sorry. It's not coming to me. But she knew. She spotted him first, and her face was just like, "Oh, this is gonna be brilliant."
So you could see Johnny's face instantly turn, but it wasn't even like a jokey thing at all, though, T, was it? It was reasonably aggressive.
Oh, he was annoyed. I think he had what he said. He came over and he made his statement. It looked like a conversation. He offered his hand for the handshake.
Yeah.
But he just basically just talked at him and then walked away.
He didn't wait for
Johnny's trying his best, you know, to make it a two-way, and he's just talking over.
He
wasn't
having
none of it.
Did you manage to catch exactly what he said? Because I thought he might have slipped into Spanish for a second.
No, it was all English, but because they were talking over each other, it was a bit confusing. I had to listen back to it about 20 times to get it, but it was good because it was amazing. I don't know if I should do the voice.
Do it. Go for it.
Do it.
So Alonso walks over and he's like, oh, I will not retire, I think. Oh, you're not going to retire? That's good. You are not world champion. And then Johnny goes, you are. And then Alonso jumps in. Probably you think you ended up as commentator because you are not true champion.
Oh.
And Johnny Herbert's like, oh, I know. Thank you very much. That's good. Okay. I wasn't world champion.
That is, and it was like, and he was so red-faced. He was just like, oh, okay. Yeah, fine. Oh, yeah. So I wasn't. He was trying to brush it off, but he clearly wasn't comfortable.
And then just at the end, he goes, oh, happy man. Would you be happy if someone was been slating you in the press? I don't think so.
I think he's just aware that he's on camera. This is his day job. And he's just trying to save some face when really he's been owned. Because you write that article, and what you don't think is you think the guy might respond with his own article or with a tweet. What you don't expect is he's obviously timed it, knowing Johnny's on air, and gone, I am going to have you, and he's just gone straight at him. I thought it was fantastic. A little bit unfair on Johnny Herbert because, you know, he could have been a champion if he hadn't have broken his legs and he'd had a few more opportunities. Bit unfair.
Faster car? I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, yes, what you're saying is true, but, I mean, come on. Do you think he would have been better prepared for that moment, because he must have known it was going to happen if he goes and writes something like that?
I don't know. I think he was completely surprised, is the impression I got. I don't think he was expecting any comeback.
Yeah, that's what I mean. I would have thought he would have been prepared for it a little bit. Well, what shall I do when I bump into him? Well, he was just like,
I don't think any other driver would have done that. I think it's because it's Fernando Alonso. He thinks he's the best driver. He's got two world championships that kind of back him up on that, and a great reputation. He's gone, no, you can't say that about me. So I think even if he just said that about Hamilton, or who was another aggressive driver, maybe Webber, you don't want to say that about. But yeah, I can see why he was surprised. So guys, what did we make of, did anyone else watch it on Channel 4?
Yeah, I don't have the choice at the moment. I'm still in the process of setting up the most cost-effective way. I think we touched on this last week.
Don't say pirate. No one.
No.
We would like to point out, it is illegal. It is illegal to pirate F1 streams easily. What we've got to stop is everyone calling everything mighty. Matt, have you noticed this? It started creeping into the F1 vernacular. Everything's a mighty. You can never have a good lap now. It's got to be just a mighty lap.
Yeah, it was mega. Frankly, I'm a fan of Lewis's "That was a sexy lap." I thought that was a pretty good way to go.
I absolutely love the sexy lap. So a reminder that if you are in the chat room, you are more than welcome to leave your comments or call in. You can add Spanners Ready on Skype and give me a bell and give me your opinion. We want to hear from you. Join the conversation. So shall we move on to when they started doing racing car stuff, Matt?
Yeah, I think that's probably a good idea.
I had a nice little effect for that, but since I can't find it, we'll do that as we go into the qualifying. So I hope you're enjoying the podcast version. If you've just downloaded it off of iTunes or something like that, you can search Missed Apex. But you are missing out on the full experience. Join the live stream on Ustream. That's the letter U followed by stream. Follow Spanners Ready on Ustream. You'll get a notification whenever we go live. What are you laughing at, Matt? What have I done?
I stream, you stream, we all stream for Missed Apex Podcast.
Oh, I'm recording that as a bumper. If you're in the chat, then be sure to call in. Just ask Tony Thunderbeast to point you at me or whatever. He'll help you with any questions. So qualifying this week, was it any better after being called the death of F1? They did exactly the same qualifying format. Because of the McLaren Red Bull protest vote, we were stuck with the same format. I feel like the beginning of it, Q2, Q3, went better, overall a bit better.
Well, it went better for me, but that's because I missed about the first 5 minutes of Q1. So I tuned it in right when Wehrlein was having his fantastic lap in the manor.
Viv, I've got a feeling that this wasn't going to impress you.
No, definitely not, especially towards the end of every queue. It was 2 minutes where basically we saw nothing on the racetrack and we just heard the commentators filling in the gaps and reminding everybody that this is the worst idea ever for qualifying. We should have. But today I was listening to one of the Sky reporters saying that maybe Pirelli is going to give more tires, but they have to decide, because if they have more tires to work on, maybe they have more laps to do during qualifying, and then we won't have all these 2 minutes towards the end where no one is at the racetrack.
But shockingly, that would need some consensus among the teams and for them to actually be able to get a vote together. Because all we heard from Christian Horner this week was complaining about the decision-making process. You know, he was one of the teams who did the protest vote. Matt, am I right in thinking that we could have had an adjusted format if him and Ron Dennis had played ball?
Well, the interesting thing is we would have had an adjusted format in that Q3 would have reverted to normal Q3, but Q1 and Q2 would have stayed the same. But really, after watching it this week, I think I'm almost on the opposite track here. I think it's Q1 and Q2 that need the adjusting, because you're not getting the chance for cars to respond once they're in the drop zone, because the timing between eliminations is too quick.
Yeah, and Q3 wasn't actually too
you
bad.
Didn't understand that at all, did you?
No, I was looking at something else. But thanks for I could have got away with that. I could have just gone to Viv and said, Viv, do you agree with Matt's point?
Yeah, I agree with Matt, because every 90 seconds, it's really just watching the grid on the screen going, you're out, and you're out. Instead of, for example, for Q3, watching the checkered flag go out and then having, crossing your finger that your best driver gets the best lap and improves and gets on the pole. That used to be exciting towards Q3. Q1 and Q2, or more or less, it could stay the same, but like Matt said, maybe more time between each elimination. But then Q3 needs to go back to where the way it was. I love watching the checkered flag and then getting to look at the drivers in the circuit and see who makes the best lap.
Tony, chat room got any comments about the new format?
Yes, we've got All Hails Me is jumping in and saying, have you seen the new proposed format? It's a joke. And Alex Humberson then follows with, it just makes for better technical rigs. Also, All Hails Me saying it was better quality, but Alex is saying, yeah, it was better, but not by much.
So a slightly better qualifying. Well, what do people want? Matt, do you think that if we carried on and just, let's just say, they can't agree? Because to me, it's very likely that they're not going to offer the old qualifying system as an option. And
I think all qualifying is done. You're right.
Yeah. And any attempt to then add in changes to make it better, out of principle, no one now wants to see this qualifying get better, because everyone is so entrenched and invested in, this is terrible, we need to change it. They're almost against any measure that might prove them wrong by tweaking it slightly and making it actually good.
Well, I think also what you're really going to run into is teams' own self-interest at this point, because a change that might favor one team will disfavor another team, and that team, being aware of it, will not vote for it.
Yeah.
You know, so you're really going to run into that. They're not going to make a change of qualifying format to disadvantage themselves. This really should have been thought through carefully. And you're running into things like literally the rate at which the cars can be refueled in the garage is limited. Therefore, you cannot put enough fuel in the car.
That's right. Yeah.
To get it back out on track and to run because the cars, the way they are now, they have to run an out lap and then a fast lap and then an in lap. You can't just hit the track and immediately be going full speed. The cars need to come up to operating temperatures, and there's just not enough time to get them through the pits on new tires, refueled and back out on track. That's a hard limit that really there's no excuse for them to have not thought that through clearly. There's no excuse at all, other than the fact that this was shoved through at the last second.
Yeah.
They're reaping what they sowed.
So, you know, I just want to say that if you look at what the goals are for this new qualifying format as to why it was introduced and all that, in many ways, the new tire regs have completely met that goal, where you have teams, they have much more liberty now in the middle of the race to change up their strategy, to try to implement some sort of pass for position, either in the pits or because they have two and three different compounds to choose from, that they may opt for, you know what, we'll put on the stickiest compound. We're going to pass on track. You're seeing more passing on track. You're seeing greater variety. The race is quite good, and the goal of the new qualifying format, I'm not sure if we're seeing really much difference as far as how much the grid is jumbled up, and because the grid would get jumbled up anyway with the old format. And Matt, guys, correct me if I'm wrong in that, you get some folks out of position, and then would have to work to get up to where they thought the real race speed of their car is. That would happen because somebody'd have a sloppy lap or whatnot, or got their timing wrong. It was already difficult on the qualifying timing, like you were talking about, Matt, as far as getting the tires on time, getting out there to warm them up, get your hot lap in. So we had that already. I'm not seeing much difference as far as how much the grid is jumbled up. More importantly, the new tire regs make it perhaps not so relevant. Racing's great right now.
It is?
Yeah, well...
Oh, sorry, Matt, go on.
Yeah, no worries. I would say that the grid is jumbled up, but the problem is the jumble is happening in the midfield and further back, where the real goal was to jumble up the front end of the field.
What can you do to do that?
But see, that's the issue. What can you do? I don't think it was thought through clearly what could be done to make it more difficult for the front runners, to put more pressure on them and to make them pay more for a mistake. And naturally, it's the midfield that's really bearing the brunt of it, which is good because we've had some super exciting racing.
I'll leave the last word on the quali format to the chat room, Tony.
Yeah, All Hails Me has jumped in and said that the old quali is done with, and Bernie's already stated this. Alex agrees. Alex then comes on with the teams have too much power.
Yeah, well, I mean, if it can be vetoed, so it seems like it can be vetoed too easily, Matt.
Yeah, I mean, the issue with the teams having a say over how the contest gets decided is that you're going to get exactly this sort of result where everyone goes for the rule that will benefit them best, and there's not unanimity. There needs to be real leadership, and I'm just going to go say it, from the FIA. They have dropped the ball the entire time Tote has been in charge. He has shown himself to be as ineffective as FIA president as he was effective as head of Ferrari, and that's just all there is to it, and it's a disaster. It's a nepotistic, paternalistic, fraternal disaster. And of leadership.
And I think we have someone joining us from the chat room who's on the line there.
Hello.
Hi, who's speaking? Ryan. Is that Ryan Ferris, our e-radio show buddy?
Yes, it is.
What have you got to say then? We are currently in the midst of qualifying, about to get onto the actual action part of it. I think we're done with whinging about the format. What was your take on it, Ryan?
Well, I still think... It needs changing, or it needs some adjusting, but I still thought it was an alright qualifying, but my main disagreements is with Hamilton and him not being penalised.
Ooh, now then, there was a couple of things that people thought he might have been penalised for. Which one do you incorrectly think he should be penalised for?
Reversing in the pit lane.
Ah, now this one I didn't quite see. Now, is there a rule that you isn't there a certain distance you can't reverse under your own power, Matt? Or is it
the
just...
rule is absolutely you may not reverse under your own power in the pit lane, period.
And he definitely did. Sorry, there's a thunderstorm outside. And he definitely did reverse under power.
It is inarguably that he reversed under power.
Now, Ryan, though, I was hearing that he was told by a steward to reverse. Would that mitigate it at all for you? Or do you just really hate Lewis Hamilton?
Well, I'm sort of just thinking, you know, I'm sort of thinking back to Mansell back in, was it 89 or 90? And he got an entire race ban. Now, I don't believe Hamilton should have got anything as severe as that. But I still sort of think, well, rules are rules. And he should have at least maybe got maybe a 5-place or a 10-place grid penalty for it.
Well, I mean, kind of karma did that for him anyway, didn't it?
Yeah, it did in the end.
So the FIA, realizing they'd made a mistake in not penalizing Hamilton, instructed Bottas to chin him up the inside of turn one. Ryan, was there another penalty that you had a problem with?
Yeah, the Magnussen penalty, which I believe happened in FP2.
Yes.
Him missing the weighbridge.
So,
yeah.
Is that not equally clear cut?
Well, I'm sort of thinking I felt that it was quite harsh, considering it only happened in a practice session, and it didn't happen. Say, if it had happened in qualifying and he did that, then yes.
Now,
what his punishment was.
Now, Ryan, rules were rules a moment ago when it was Herr Hamilton, but now it's, hey, come on, let's just leave the poor lad alone.
Yeah, well, I sort of think he should have got a penalty, but not as severe as that. I sort of think he should have got, yeah, something like, again, a 10-place grid penalty or something like that for what he did. But I still don't, I think for what he did, he shouldn't have, especially if it was in a practice session, I don't think he should have been given a penalty as severe as that.
Excellent. We'll take the rest of the comment off that off air. Ryan, thank you very much for calling in. We'll catch you soon on E-Radio Show.
Yeah, no problem. Thanks very much, guys.
Bye. Was that harsh, the Magnussen penalty? It's one of those
maybe
things. Apparently, the driver steward said to the FIA, come on, you don't have to give him a penalty for that. But they were like, no, rules were rules. So, yeah, but rules weren't rules for Hamilton. So a bit of inconsistency, perhaps.
Well, perhaps. The Hamilton thing is a little more fraught for me personally, because you're supposed to be directed where to park, and he was not the steward, whoever was supposed to have been in charge of pointing the cars where they go, was absent.
Ah, so he had no idea where to go.
Clearly not there. And so his reverse, as such, was simply an attempt to get his car where it was supposed to be after the end of quali, since he finished on pole. And it's also very, very clear that the amount of reversing he did was probably maybe a meter or less.
Okay, then. Would you?
So it's more arguable from his point of view, because the normal controls that were supposed to be in place were not there. And it could have been that he was directed to put his car, put it there. And, you know, it's the same thing. If a policeman waves you through a red light, you know, are they then going to write you a ticket for running a red light? It seemed to me a bit more that situation. But it's definitely arguable. He could have been penalized for it and perhaps should have been. Magnussen, less so. The light was red. He drove through it. End of story.
Okay, guys. So chat room. Please remember that Tony is hard of reading, so you will have to type clearly, preferably in block capitals. I won't make this a regional thing, but I have seen Tony read, and he puts his finger on the word that he's reading, which is a disaster, because he also eats baked beans with his hands, so that often leaves streaks of orange on all his books. Don't lend him a book. Let's go over to the chat room. What comments are coming in?
All right, so Alex Humberson, he's throwing back to the coverage, and he said he did watch it on Channel 4, and he said it was quite good. I then said, well, to be fair, I'm not going to complain about free service, really, because I'm Northern and anything free is great. He said he found it less annoying than the BBC.
It's not free, though, is it? There is tax. It's run by the government, Channel 4. But do we pay for it?
Oh, it's money isn't changing hands, so in my opinion, it's free.
Free.
And also, Anonymous 45541, I'm sorry, I don't know his name, mm-hmm. said MB disabled 44's traction control again.
All right, okay, so this is talking about the start. So that brings us nicely onto the race action. Who was trying to get
really,
in there?
Really?
Really? The race. Let's do the race this time.
You're going to ignore a record-setting lap by your hero?
Well, I wasn't going to give away my allegiances, but yes.
Honestly.
This is the first time one of these little tiny V6s has beaten a lap time from the V10 era. And that was Lewis Hamilton. He managed it, but only just. And Nico Rosberg failed, unfortunately, to do so. So I'm sure that Lewis Hamilton will be going home this weekend with that in his heart rather than the race result.
Right. And if I can just speak to the exceeding track limits. Because he did on the first run, clearly run entirely wide on the last turn. He lost traction and got off onto the AstroTurf. So first of all, he clearly lost time in the lap. I don't care what anybody says.
Yes.
Because he was 7/10 down and he wasn't going into the last sector.
Yeah.
But more to the point, it's very clear the FIA hands out a pre-race set of rules in which they specifically mark off turns where if you exceed limits, you will be penalized. And that turn was not on that list. And they do it for every single race. They say drivers exceeding limits at turn X, Y, or Z will be penalized if they gain an advantage. He did not gain an advantage, and it was clearly a mistake on his part. And as such, your time is not scrubbed.
Yeah, I thought that was a non-issue, to be honest. I mean, there is a section of the internet who actually doesn't like Lewis Hamilton all that much, and they will leap on anything to criticise him. But I mean, Van Dorn also went wide there. And I think what we've seen plenty of history where there are some tracks where they're not bothered about it, but there are some tracks where they identify specific corners. I'm now thinking of Austria, the final corner. And possibly the one before it, where you gain an advantage, where you can carry more speed from that first right-hand turn by exceeding the track limits onto the final straight. So they specifically said there, all four wheels off, that lap is invalidated. But there's been loads and loads of occasions where they've let it go because they weren't that bothered, or they've thought you're only harming yourself to run off onto the dirty bit of the track there. So yeah, I think this is cut and dry for me.
And more to the point, they had a journalist kart race. And if you saw the footage from that, oh my God, they had no regard for track limits whatsoever. How could they even bring it up as a subject ever again with any kind of authority is beyond me. They were mental. They were driving way over the limits.
Can we talk about the race? Can we talk about the race now, Matt? Are you quite happy? No, you were absolutely right to go back and cover that, because that was a big point of controversy on social media. But if we go to Lights Out...
Apex.
It was a heck of a start. I don't even know where to start.
I think you should start on the formation lap, because one of the most interesting things possible happened on the formation lap.
Oh, dear. Vivian?
Well, what can we say? There was a lot of action in the formation lap, unbelievably. But did you all see Rosberg's anti-stall and all the cars passing by? And Rosberg was like, what, fourth or third?
On the formation lap, yeah, yeah.
On the formation lap. He didn't see the lights go out or something happened. And then we had the misfortune that Vettel had an engine failure, and that makes his first DNF in his F1 career. And then again, we saw Jolyon Palmer with a Renault who didn't start at all. So there were three things going on before the race even started.
That's a real shame. What was the issue with Jolyon Palmer?
Don't know. I wanted to ask Vortex, because looking at Vettel's failure, it did not look like Kimi's failure to me. Do you agree with that? Did you see it?
I mean, Ferrari, this was the new engine. It was supposed to be better, faster, and boom, boom, they're popping.
Yeah. Be interesting to see if they can save that power unit.
Yeah, so it really did take away the element of the race, which was that Vettel would get in amongst the Mercedes and stop them. And I'm going to be honest, sorry, Vivian, but once Vettel was out, I was like, well, that's the Ferrari threat over with.
Yeah, but fortunately, someone came to the rescue.
I know. So we're talking about turn one. Again, Hamilton, it wasn't a terrible start this time, I don't think, but it was, I don't know how you saw it, Ken, but it just seemed that Rosberg got a better start. It wasn't like Hamilton got a disastrous start compared to the rest of the pack.
Well, I don't know. I think, you know, if we compare Hamilton's start to Rosberg's start, Hamilton, I thought he lost on that deal. Is that right?
Yeah, his start was not as good. They caught some, I think, wheel spin in second or third gear as he was leaving the line. He had some wheel spin. But he said after the race that his reaction, he simply did not react to the lights as quickly as Nico did. But regardless, again, for the second straight race, it was the start. And we know that Mercedes now is pursuing a new clutch solution coming from AMG Daimler rather than from, I think, Sox, who currently makes their clutches.
If you look back at the Australian Grand Prix and the fantastic start that both Ferraris made, the real surprise was, of course, Raikkonen coming off the line. He was in a position where he could have been leading going into turn one, and what a different race it would have been. And look what happened to him, right? You know, he bogged as well, and he ended up just fighting for podium.
Okay, so we've just had somebody else call in on Skype. Who are we talking to?
Martin.
Martin, hello. Welcome to Missed Apex Podcast. What point would you like to make to the panel today?
I just want to say that I think that the opening lap was it was a bit abysmal, really. It was almost as though they were all just playing bumper cars.
Unprofessional, are you suggesting?
I think unprofessional is a bit... It's a bit too much to say, but it's almost as though they didn't know what was going on the track, what was going on next to them. All the training just seemed to have gone out the window.
And if you had to commit, you are the referee. We saw the number 77 of Bottas smash unceremoniously into the side pod.
That was a clear case cut. That was Bottas' fault. That was.
And the thing is, F1, believe it or not, can be quite partisan based on your favourite driver, Martin. So can we say, who are your F1 allegiances to?
I'm a McLaren and Mercedes fan.
Oh,
Mercedes.
I am terribly sorry. and very brave of you to come out and talk about it, I think, in this era. So you're thinking that was clearly a case of what, Bottas just braking late and going for a gap that wasn't there?
Yeah, it was. I think it was more a race incident than anything else. I think his drive-through penalty was a bit over the top.
Okay, and what about some of the other first lap clashes? Have you got any opinions on those?
I can't bring one to mind straight away, but I just think it was like, what were they doing? It just felt like they were driving into each other just to get out of the way.
At least it made for a bit of fun. But did you enjoy this weekend more than the opening weekend?
I thought the first up to about lap 35 was all right. It was good. It was entertaining. And then it died on its bum towards the end, to be honest. Verstappen seemed to get...
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number smart beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number limited edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
A good kind of push towards the end. But other than that, it was...
died on its bum. I actually wrote that exact same phrase, but for lap 40. Martin, thank you very much for calling in. Hope you're enjoying the chat room, and I hope to hear from you again soon.
No problems.
Well, there we go. So that is what we want to hone in on, because this is what everyone's going to be arguing about. And I've already heard cases of friends falling out, people blocking people on Twitter over this. Whose fault was it? I'm going to go to Ken first because he's smiling. Could Hamilton have left a bit of room?
I think he did leave a fair amount of room there, actually. It was, so I saw, who's our Sky F1 commentator, Martin
Brundle.
Brundle, not Blundell. I thought Brundle called that correctly, in that break would have been the better point than the valor of Valtteri Bottas there, right? You know, the one thing that Bottas had, though, that car is quick in a straight line. It was fast on the straights all the way, and I think that Hamilton perhaps was preparing to attack in the following turns, and so he eased up, and he wasn't really conscious of somebody doing a dive bomb on the inside. So, you know, initially I thought that could have gone either way, but you know, fair play for him to get the penalty that Bottas got. It was a brave choice.
Matt?
Yeah, I want to go 2 points deep on this. First of all, is to remember that the size of the cockpit had been raised yet again. This limits the driver's lateral vision. And it was very clear that Hamilton was focused on Rosberg. And you can see by him running wide to the outside, he was simply trying to maintain more momentum through the apex so that he could have a go at him coming around turn three. And it was clearly what he was up to, I think. And as such, he was probably looking in his mirrors and saw Bottas coming, but he may not have been able to pick up how quickly he was coming. And he wouldn't have seen him out of his peripheral vision necessarily, because again, the higher size of the cockpit limit your vision there. Bottas, on the other hand, would have had a clear view of everything that was going on. And I think he was imagining he could get directly alongside Lewis, where it would have been wheel on wheel contact. And I think that was just optimistic. And when he realized it was not going to happen, it was too late for him to back out of it. It would have been smarter for him to leave the room for Hamilton, I think, for his race, would have been smarter. That said, I'm not sure I agree with a penalty, because I've seen before on lap one this exact situation happen. And given the fact that neither Hamilton nor Bottas was kicked out of the race due to their damage, I've seen that move go unpunished before. So it may have been a bit harsh. But that's going to be down most likely to your driver, steward, and or the telemetry from the car, which may have told a story that we couldn't see on TV.
Tony, who are the chat room blaming?
Who are the chat room blaming? We've got Anonymous 45541. Still hasn't told me his name yet, so that's just what I'm going to call him. He said, Did 44 not see Bottas because a hair got in his eye?
Oh, is that a reference to Monaco last year when he said something got in his eye? Okay, harsh. I think he's outed himself as not a Hamilton fan there. Tony, you seemed a bit surprised by me going to you and asking about the chat room. I must point out you have one job.
No, I was checking something else and I had to unmute quickly. It's complicated.
You're not here for your looks, you know, mate.
Oh, MG5904 jumped in with a first lap clash. Penalty seems a bit harsh, but I think we might have covered that already.
Yeah, no, that's fine. Vivian, who do you blame? Oh, I think we might have lost Vivian there. So my work...
I blame a little bit both, but Lewis was closing in the curve, so he didn't give a lot of space to Bottas.
Yeah, no, now I'm intended to agree. Okay, I'll out myself. I'm a Lewis Hamilton fan, hashtag 44, all the rest of it. Fine, let's get it out in the open.
You're biased.
I am massively biased, but I do try not to be. Now, I do think it was Bottas's fault. I do think he caused the incident. But when you're coming into turn one like that, you can't expect to be able to take your normal racing line all the time. And I just couldn't help but feel if he'd have just left a corridor on his right-hand side in case a car was coming, he would not have been fouled in any way. It would have not affected his racing line and he would have just exited the corner in second place. But I do also feel that I don't think Bottas would have made that corridor even if Hamilton had left it. I still feel like he would have touched it, Ken. I still feel like he'd have gone into his side pod.
No, I always like to say on an incident like that, it takes two to tango. And so, I mean, sure, if the door is going to be left open and you get a dive bomb on the inside, you know, you can leave a little room so that you're not clobbered, right? You know, if the door is left open, but you don't have enough room to really stick it in there and get your front wheel alongside the other guy's front wheel, then, you know, you need to bang the brake really hard, lock it up, turn, whatever you got to do to avoid it if you can, or prepare to pay the penalty for the mistake. But, you know, I mean, I think like it was said earlier, that comes down to the driver's steward on a really narrow call like that, and some will say it was harsh.
Okay, and that kind of set the tone for the rest of the race because, no, Vivian, you are a little bit Dalek-y. You're asking me if I can hear you okay. You're a little bit Dalek-y, and your picture's gone. But that set the tone for the race because Hamilton sort of ended up in sort of fifth or sixth, and that car didn't quite look 100%. It was missing end plates. The bodywork was clearly rubbing. So, you know, so how much do you think that affected him, Matt?
Well, actually, the floor was damaged. I'd say that was the most significant damage by far. And the estimates from Mercedes were around 0.8 a lap.
So at that point, we're saying 0.8 a lap, that much for that damage.
That's what they're saying, yeah.
Yeah, so at that point, we were hoping...
Now, granted, that's coming from Mercedes, so maybe they're leaning on that number a little bit. But it was clear on same tires that Lewis was no faster than Kimi, and we know that the Mercedes is faster than the Ferrari, so that tells you all you really need to know.
And there was a few more breakages as well. I mean, Perez had a very, very busy race. He smashed his front wing, Matt.
Yeah, it was half gone. I don't even know what happened, personally. Like, I went back and tried to figure out who he hit. Sainz suffered a puncture. I mean, they just it literally looked like a Formula E race there for a second.
And like Martin was saying, it just, I don't know, what was it about this weekend then? Is it because they've all set up, they know it's a racy track, they know it's a track they can overtake on, so they've really gone for it?
Well, I think it's a couple of things. I think, first of all, in contrast to Melbourne, Bahrain is a very tricky track, and it allows for multiple lines through corners.
Yep.
And the second thing is, and this is always the thing that I think people can't appreciate, they almost never run their cars with the tanks full until they get to the start. And you're with the added weight on the car and with the brakes being cold, man, your first couple of turns are always going to be a bit of an adventure. And I think that might have played into it as well.
But that wasn't, you know, that wasn't typical. What are the chat room making out, Tony, then, in this great debate? Are they still talking about whose fault it is? It is.
Martin's jumped in and said, regardless of whose fault it was, he just commented on that it was a good recovery from both drivers, considering Hamilton was facing the wrong way.
Yeah.
Super relevant as well. MG5904 has also just said he's such a Hamilton fan, he's named his cat after him, which is amazing.
No, that's good to know. That's feedback I want.
No, it is. It's
Join the conversation.
Important.
You, followed by stream, / spanners ready.
proper journalism here. Anonymous 45541, Vivian, you look marvellous. And then finally, I'll jump in with Senior Trowell. He says, it looked to me like Hamilton should have missed the apex.
Hey!
He says, is this thing on? Is this thing on?
Oh, you missed the apex.
We're talking to you, Hamilton and Bottas. And look, I don't want people to objectify Vivian Bove just because she's a beautiful Honduran lady, unless it helps ratings, in which case, yes, definitely continue doing that. What else caught your eye, Matt? Because as much as there's so much to talk about, I really do want to keep these recordings to an hour.
Sorry, we are missing the big story.
Okay, well then.
Big story is Haas, F1, and Romain Grosjean.
I think so. What a story. And the Americanness infusing F1 is amazing. They gained a place. By Monaco, they'll win.
Absolutely. Well, here's the thing. His start was really good. He was up, I think, to P6 on the first lap from P9. So he gained 3 on the start.
Yeah.
But more to the point, they were able to keep him there throughout the race. He was definitely a proper P5, which is where he finished. And, you know, maybe with some development, we could be giving Red Bull a little bit of a run for their money, which would be great to have competition for P4 and P5 as well.
And there was no gifted free pit stop. There was no extenuating circumstances. They were there 100%. That was their race. And the car looked good. Grosjean looked aggressive and tough. Like, what has got into him?
Well, I think he's always been that way. He's finally been given a car he can drive, is I think what happened.
Yeah, so he's been given a nice drivable car. Ken,
wait, man.
Oh, here we go. Oh, no.
I mean, my God, do we forget about the years where he was at Lotus and he was dogfighting with Kimi? I mean, he showed some of that before. I think, though, what's really I think it's not just Haas, it's also Grosjean. And then we should highlight that there's a couple of big things. That one, he took a chance, right? You know,
yes,
a new team, right? And he came in as the hired gun, and it looks great for two things. One, Haas made the right choice. Grosjean is performing outstanding, right, with a brand new team. And number two, let's remember that Grosjean had a very rough early career. He came in as a very young guy, and he admitted, my God, the pressure got to me, and he made horrible mistakes, right? He went back down to the junior formulas. He came back up. He had a guy at Lotus that really believed in him, and that was Eric Boullier, right? So he's always been with Eric Boullier. They both speak the French or whatever that language is that they speak over there. And he
French,
is no
yes.
longer with Eric Boullier. He is just the experienced hired gun over there at Haas. And I think part of the joy that we hear on the radio at the end of the two races that he's done this in is that it's a new phase of his career. He does have the chops to do it. He is performing great. He's doing everything pretty much spot on. It's a kind of a special moment, actually, for team and driver.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. And it's not just the driving, but also I think maybe the development as well that we're going to see from him. Because as we've seen in the past, not every driver, even a driver who's fast, is also helpful with the development. But clearly they have good feedback there.
And he's been not lucky. I'm not saying his performance has been lucky, but there is another Haas car, believe it or not. We've just not really seen it in a competitive state. But what a shame for Gutierrez that he has not been able to kind of show what he can do in that machinery.
Yes, well, between Alonso and his brakes, it's been a rough two races for Gutierrez.
Yeah. I'll be interested to see, because when Haas announced Gutierrez, I was very critical, saying that, you know, saying that it showed a lack of ambition employing a driver like Gutierrez, who I felt was probably there not perhaps on merit, but perhaps on the same vein as some of the other pay driver money. Yes, Ken's making that. I didn't want to say he's a pay driver. He's a pay driver. And yes, I understand the economic realities of the midfield teams, new teams. So I just think he's got something to prove. And if Grosjean really is on form, it could make him look bad.
It could. It may, but we have yet to see him finish a race, so we don't know. The thing about Gutierrez is he's had some good drives in the past. He has some speed.
Yeah.
But he wound up being wildly inconsistent in the last part of the full season that he drove. And it's going to be that same thing. Will he be able to survive the competitive environment mentally, I think, more so than in terms of talent?
Okay, yeah. So who else are the chat room impressed with? Tony Thunderbeast Barnard, as you must legally be referred to.
Yeah, Alex Humberston says, yeah, he's impressed by Van Dorn and Kvyat. They did a good job too. You want to jump in on that then?
Yeah, well, okay. Well, let's I'll come back to you in a second. Van Dorn, brilliant. To jump in what is effectively mid-season and get right up to speed. I think he had a great race. He looked really racy.
Yes, and he didn't drive into anybody.
Is that sarcastic? Did I miss him driving into someone?
No, literally. Unlike Alonso, whom he was deputized for, he drove into no one.
He managed to not hit a Gutierrez. Well done.
Yeah, great point there, actually. I mean, it was a clean race, and he was fast, and my God, he out-qualified his world champion teammate the day before. It was a great performance overall, you got to say, for a debut.
Yeah, okay.
It's that French word. It's just hard for us Americans.
Those darn French.
I don't know. Hey, no. We welcome our French brothers. But why is he saying that? Why have I got the impression that Gaviria had a shocker this weekend? And he's saying in the chat room that he's impressed with him. He was locking up all over the place, making a bit of a hash of himself. And he was mysteriously off the pace in qualifying.
Kvyat, yeah, had a rough race, and I think it's encapsulated when Verstappen passed him for the first time. He was locking up, and
yes,
Verstappen just like went carved right through him like a hot knife through butter. And so, you just, in that moment, you just saw, okay, yeah, you're pretty done for then. It's going to be Verstappen at Red Bull next year.
Yeah, right. I saw people say that too, but what was Kvyat's race actually like? Didn't he start pretty far back
in the field?
So yeah, he was having to fight his way all the way back up?
He started behind Verstappen, and he was P15, and the first pass I think definitely came when he was on old tires, if I'm remembering correctly. But none of that really matters, because Verstappen is the flavor of the day, and Kvyat is finishing 2 to 3 places down on Ricardo right now.
Okay, Tony, I interrupted you. Who else were the chat room impressed with?
Yeah, let's have a look. Oh, Anonymous 31231 says Rio Oriento is a dud.
Wrong again, Anonymous 31231.
Give us your opinion, why don't you?
Did you see? No, he's absolutely right. But did you see the poll after Australia? The FIA put out a driver of the race public vote, but what they failed to do was narrow down the options. So knowing the great British public, if you put Rio Haryanto on that list, we are all going to vote for him. And sure enough, he won the poll by some margin, by like triple of the next person.
Mega.
Absolutely. But yeah, so what do we've not really seen anything from him. Do you think this is just a classic pay driver coming in to fill a seat?
I think we should be very thankful for the fabulous young Rio, because he is helping to fund Pascal Wehrlein, or however he is pronounced, in one of those other strange countries called Germany. Because Pascal, I think, was in many ways up for driver of the day. He had a fantastic race, and it kind of shows it's a classic thing where you take a super talented young guy and put him in a car that has children's safe, horrible chassis, but the best motor on the grid, and cut him loose and see what he can do in a race. In many ways, Pascal shows it's the old school Formula One, wrestle a mediocre chassis to as high as you can go. He did an outstanding performance, and it's the problem with Pascal is he can only be compared to Rio, who's helping to fund that drive. So we really don't know, but the fact that he can consistently beat the Saubers, it's a great performance to see at this point of the season.
Now, who came over? Go on, sorry, Matt.
It's a bit of a shame we didn't wind up with Rossi in that seat, because I think Rossi would have provided a little more challenge for him. But I think what you're beginning to see is, with the influence of Mercedes, Manor's unlocking a bit more performance from that chassis. And he qualied P16 in a stellar lap. in the car. It was really exciting to watch him go through the elimination times, that they managed to time it correctly. But also, he finished P13 in the race, and he was on P12. He was trying to get P12 when he ran out of laps. So he was not done. And if they get a bit more performance out of that car, they could be scoring points, I think.
Vivian, are you still with us?
Her spinning circle will live on.
It's a shame we've lost Vivian because she had some stuff to say. Toro Rosso can't.
I'm here.
You're there. You had a comment about the Toro Rosso pit stops.
Yeah, epic fail.
Yeah.
Epic fail. Come on, they've been practicing forever and ever pit stops, and the rear jack falls?
Yeah, no, he couldn't even keep it on the rear jack. That was amazing.
That was ugly. And Red Bull, too. Red Bull, too, had a less than quick pit stop for Ricardo at one point. It was over 4 seconds, which is highly unusual for them.
Yeah. And I meant to point out, actually, when you were talking about Haas, that challenged with their first actual pit stop in a race, they actually failed. 2 out of 3 of them were very poor.
Yeah, they were not as fast as they should have been. I don't think it really impacted where he finished in the race at all, fortunately enough. But it's definitely an issue they're going to need to get on top of. I can see Helmut Marko breaking out the whips and chains, though.
To whip him into shape.
Ooh, yeah, it's going to be an ugly dressing down for that.
But I tell you what, I think we've just jumped around a bit there, but a testament to how bad the chassis is, Ken, I don't know if I'm reading this right, but I think Magnussen came on the radio and said, I cannot overtake that Manor because it is like a rocket on the straight, which says to me that thing has got no downforce whatsoever and it's just letting the Mercedes power push it down the straight.
Yeah, spot on. And I'm glad you mentioned that. And that does show exactly how bad that chassis is. They can't generate enough downforce. And so what he's doing to get it through the corners and try to carry enough speed out of the corners, it's just down purely to driver talent trying to use a car that has less downforce and therefore less grip in the corners, and then it rockets down the straight. I thought that was a great comment. I'm glad you mentioned that.
Yeah, I know things about stuff. I've been faking it for long enough. So, guys, last few minutes of the show, like what points? Obviously, Rosberg cruised to a relatively easy victory in the end. But, Matt, what would you like to say about stuff?
Well, first of all, you have to hand it to Rosberg. He's had two fantastic races in a row. His starts have been good enough, and his drives have been
he's done everything
really
that's been required.
Drama-free. So hats off to him. But the elephant in the room, I think, is the medium tire. What a dud in this race. It killed Williams. It was so bad that Mercedes put Hamilton on it to run long and try and make up for his loss of positions. They brought him in first to get rid of it. It sucked so bad. And yet Williams goes and runs a second stint on that tire. I cannot fathom why they did this. It was not the tire of choice. Everyone who had an option avoided it like the plague. And even Mercedes, they had 4 laps of looking at Williams. I'm surprised that they went that direction with Hamilton, but they must have thought they knew something that Williams didn't, is the only thing I can perceive.
Well, that's a great point, Matt. And if we're doing the true confessions, I'm a Williams fan, I suppose. And so what I noticed is that Williams was the only team to have 2 brand new unused sets of mediums. And Williams has this history of not being very flexible with their pit strategy. And so they must have gone in with a piece of paper that said, thou shalt use both sets of brand new mediums during the race. And then finally, toward the end of the race, they said, okay, maybe we should give up on that because we're not the only ones that are not fast on the medium. But great point about the medium. It was very strange to see that didn't work at all, but it made for a great race because it required a lot more pit stops.
Absolutely. And that's one of the many things that made the race a lot more fun to watch. I think Vivian is actually, I don't know if she's there or not. She's commented that the medium tire was, go ahead.
Yeah, the medium tire was as popular as the qualifying format. Nobody loved it.
but given that last week, 2 weeks ago, it was the go-to magic bullet, and then this week, you say Hamilton sort of leaned on it. I was quite hopeful when he bolted the medium on that maybe that could make up some of the deficit and he could go long. But really, he was still down on pace, and it didn't last that much longer than, or do you think they just gave up on it because of the lack of pace?
It didn't last longer at all.
Yeah.
There was no pace in it and there was no point in him running it.
Yeah. Okay. So why don't we pass the last couple of points over to the chat room, T?
Hey, the chat room's been a buzz of activity.
It has, though. I've just been looking. It's an actual buzz of activity. So thank you.
It's been really good this week. It's really appreciated.
Thank you to everyone who's joined us, and I hope you'll do it again, and I hope we'll get more call-ins. What are they saying? What points do they want to bring up to end the show on?
Right, you'll like this. MG5904. Has there been any mention regarding Kimi's reaction on the podium? He looked like he was given a participation ribbon rather than a second-place trophy. And then Senior Trowell jumped in. Kimi was just upset. Anytime he gets a podium, he has to deal with fake, no alcohol, pretend champagne.
Rose water. Yes, he does always seem to sort of win the Middle Eastern races where they ban the alcohol. He can't genuinely have been upset about that, can he? I think, to be honest, though, do you think it's just that anything other than a win is not good enough?
I think he could have been upset because, as Vortex pointed out earlier, man, P1 was his if he'd had a decent start.
Yep. And,
instead, it was. I'm hoping he's fighting to get back to P5, P4 at the end of the first lap.
Vivian, I'm going to say this to pick a fight with you. Vettel would have won that race.
Yeah, Vettel really smoked up his victory, and maybe Kimi could have been second, and then maybe Nico Rosberg third if Kimi would have had a great start also.
Yeah, I don't think I'm being unkind. I think Vettel had a real shot at winning that race if his engine hadn't blown. You don't think so, Ken?
Oh, no, I think we saw what Vettel can do at this track last year. He made it pretty darn clear, frankly, and Kimi outperformed him pretty handily. It just is Kimi's track. I want to highlight, though, there's this guy from Australia named Daniel Ricciardo. He finished fourth. And yeah. I think what's interesting about that, and I just want to insert this quick point, is that he has a little Renault motor in the back of his car. Renault is bringing a big upgrade to Canada. The potential there is that we're going to have three teams fighting for the podium thereafter, depending upon, and it's going to be a big step, depending upon what Renault does with that motor. That's really all we need to see Red Bull fighting for podiums, perhaps.
But what Red Bull also need is flowing circuits to be competitive. So, like, downforce required in Bahrain. Am I wrong?
True. But on the other hand, that car works really well in medium speed corners.
So like Barcelona, Barcelona should be strong in Barcelona.
True. But they need more motor, I think, really, to be able to compete with the big boys. And they're going to get that. We're going to see the latter part of the season, perhaps something exciting.
Okay then, guys, so let's move on. The race finishes and I want to play this because I like it and it makes me feel like there's been a celebration. Let's go towards the end of our show. I want to find out from all of you guys, who was your driver of the week? So obviously my vote is Haryanto because I like to go with the people. Matt, who's your driver of the week?
Ooh, this was a difficult one for me. And it was really, I think, down to either Wehrlein or Grosjean. But I'm going to have to go with Grosjean because there were real points on the line.
Grosjean. For him.
And you know what? I'm going to toss in a Van Dorn.
You can't have two.
Because he scored points for McLaren. Oh, my God.
You have to pick one. Pick one. I'm writing it down. Pick one.
Grosjean.
That is just nationalistic. It's just because the elections are coming up. You've all been waving your flags and you can't see past an American flag.
Grosjean is French.
Yeah, but come on.
And aside from his fries, I mean, really.
Over the radio, that was awesome, man. Good job. And they patted his bum. Can't get any more American.
Grosjean said it was the real American dream on the radio.
Ken, who's your driver of the week?
Okay, so I was in the same boat as Matt. You know, I was super impressed with Pascal. And, of course, Grosjean, I thought, I argued earlier for him. But since Matt has chosen Grosjean, I'm going to be contrarian. I'll just say Ricciardo, the guy I just spoke about, because look at where his teammate finished. He had a lonely race. It was an easy race to fourth, and yet he could have been farther down, I think, as we saw from what his teammate did. Great performance, big points for that team,
yep,
with perhaps not a strong engine. So
and
well
he did a good
there.
Job all weekend, and he put himself in the right place to take advantage off the grid. Vivian, is it even worth asking you? Your driver of the race, obviously Perez.
Yeah, I was gonna go like Matt and Ken did at the beginning with Grosjean, but then
no,
I'm
you weren't.
So biased, and I'm gonna say Kimi Raikkonen.
I love how you.
It's his eighth podium in Bahrain.
Why did you even bother lying?
Been in the podium in Bahrain.
Excellent, excellent. And Tony,
and
would you
besides,
gone?
He's 3 points ahead of his teammate.
He's 3 points ahead of his teammate. Well, that is true. Yeah.
First time.
Yeah, well, that's a good point. Number one Ferrari driver. Tony, would you like to say the name of a driver that you've heard?
Yes, we've actually had a message earlier on. But
yeah.
We went past what he was, you know. But it was MG5904 says, kudos to Fred for sticking around all race weekend with busted ribs and no drive. So I'm going to go with him.
You're going to go for Fernando Alonso as your driver of the weekend who didn't drive. Once again, you know, you're validating my decision to bring a non-F1 fan onto the show to help us out. Thanks, Tony.
Oh, you got it.
So my real driver of the weekend, I think you've got to give it to Rosberg again this week. He could not have done any more. You give it to the man who's won 5 Grand Prix in a row. And as a Hamilton fan, I hope that comes to an end pretty soon. But hats off to him at the moment. He hasn't really put a foot wrong. He's not the strongest qualifier in the world. He's up against one of the very best qualifiers. He's doing well to even keep up. He was only like 0.07 of a second off him, I think. And then he got the better start. Job done, lights to flag. So Rosberg for me. Tony, what was this week's comment of the week from the chat room?
This week goes to MG5904 at 8:22 hours in the PM. Full disclosure, Hamilton fan, have a cat named after him. Cat emoji.
Cat emoji. What, did he write cat emoji or there was a cat emoji?
There was an emoji with a cat.
Comment of the week.
Guys, you're getting it all wrong.
Who got it all wrong this week?
Oh, you're gonna make me pick. I got, oh, there's so much to think about. So many people got it very, very wrong. But Bottas at the end of the day.
Yes, Bottas gets my vote as well. I was going to go for TR, Toro Rosso, rear jackman. Ken?
Well, I'm going to go for the Williams team for that crazy strategy and hanging on to those mediums way too long.
Vivian, who gets your wooden spoon?
Yeah, the Toro Rosso jackman, definitely.
Okay, and I won't bother going to you guys. Please come and find us on iTunes, the Mixed Apex podcast. We are now there. We're featuring in new and noteworthy podcasts. So some reviews, a 5-star review, make it amusing, make it witty, or taking the piss out of Matt's general appearance, and we can read it out on the podcast. Why not come and find us on Facebook and join the closed Mixed Apex Facebook group? There are 44 people in there right now. You could be the 45th. Ken, where can people find you?
I'm at Twitter at Vortex Motio, VorteXMotio. There's no R in there except in Vortex, my friends.
Okay, then. And you know stuff about stuff and you're worth following. Vivian can be found on Honduran Radio. But for most of us, you can find them on Twitter. Find you on Twitter at?
At Vivian Bove, Bove.
Tony, come on, people like you. Where can they go for more?
I am on the Twitter, at A Dad's View. Facebook, just search for A Dad's View. I don't know a lot about a lot, unlike Vortex, but I post generic people-pleasing things like pictures and memes.
Pictures and memes. Everyone loves that. Matt, of course, people can catch you and me on E-Radio Show on Downforce Radio. What other work can you point them at?
Well, you can find me, of course, on the Twitters at MattPT55, and you can look for my race reviews at thejudge13.com.
Yeah, your race reviews are the best on the internet, so I do recommend that. Oh, we had a Toto Wolf on the line, but there is no time to take another call, so apologies to Toto. Until next time, wounds heal, chicks dig scars, and glory lasts forever. See you next time on Mist Apex. And re-emphasize many thanks to the chat room. Absolutely fantastic having you there. It is actually a massive distraction. Even though Tony's running, I cannot help but have a look at what conversation is going on.
Yeah, they really put me through my paces.
Yeah, I don't think you did as well as you did last week with the increased volume.
Because there was nothing else going on last week, so it was pretty easy.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more.
and is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic-butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ. Invesco QQQ is proud to sponsor this episode and even prouder to provide access to innovation for the last 25 years. Basketball has had innovations over the years, too. We're seeing the game played in new ways every day. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.